All right, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, January 2nd, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
January 6th.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First item on our agenda is public comment period number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to other reports, and it's ISAC and Wellmark FY 2016 renewal meeting. And Amanda's here with us today. Hi there.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you.
I have with me Pat Lynch, the city right next to me.
Has anything changed since you gave this at the board meeting?
No, nope. Okay. We're just going to debrief everybody else in the morning. So, Matt's here with my maternity leave coming up 2.5 weeks from now. He's going to help out in the meantime.
Ah, super.
Throw me up here in the weather. Pretty good guy. Okay. So, yeah, so if you want to open your folder. On the right side is the fiscal year 2014 report, as Rick referred to. And again, same report we go through every year, so we'll give you the Cliff's Notes version kind of with what's happened throughout the past year in terms of utilization of the whole plan and then Story County specifically where your utilization's been this past year. So page two shows the historical utilization of the 24 counties that are in the ISAC pool, and then again, we'll focus on that column over to the far right, 2014. Those are the claims that occurred for this past health care plan year that would have started July 1st, 2013, ended June 30th of 2014. You can see the fund balance has been pretty stable over those years. We know we'd like to keep a pretty good reserve in there to protect the plan. So this year we started at $21,850,745.41. The next section is going to include the incomes that have come into the program, the biggest of which being the county premium. So again, 24 counties paid in this year, $24 million. There's a couple other items within this section. I'll kind of skip to the ones that are of significance. The stop-loss credits, about halfway down the income section there this year, we got credits back from Wellmark almost at $2 million. We've talked in the past about how the wellness effort certainly helped to keep those large claims down. This year we had a number of individuals that were over $100,000, which is where that amount came in from. And, of course, that $2 million that we got back from Wellmark does contribute to increases in our premium. So, again, reason for those wellness efforts and to continue those. So $2 million we did get back there. Total revenue into the program this year was $26.753 million, as you can see. Expenses out of the program, obviously the biggest piece being paid claims. So 24 counties, employees, members, including dependents and spouses, this year amounted to $23.2 million in claims. And that is a number that's net of discounts. And so that's going to be all the hospital, doctor, prescription drug claims, taking into account Wellmark discounts that would have been earned with those claims as well. Wellmark administration, that's our fee in order to administer the plan and pay the claims, $738,304. We'll skip down to the wellness program expenses. This year we incurred $360,000. Again, that's the $250 that we give each employee if they could choose to participate in the different programs. Also the discounts that counties do receive for those programs as well. The stop-loss premiums, we talked about how we got the credits in the income section. This year we had about $1.8 million in premium. When we do skip to the projections page that ISAC puts together, you'll notice that those fees, again, are going up in response to the claims going up. So that's something just to point out as well. Another change that we've seen in the program as we've discussed these past few years, the PCORI and ACA fees, the last item there within the expense section, these are new due to the federal health care reform law. So we're starting to see these fees hit the books. And as you know, ISAC has agreed to pay these fees on behalf of the county, so those are showing up as well. This year we had a total, if you add up those two columns, of $65,000 about. When we come next year and talk, it'll be closer to $300,000, $400,000 as we start to see those bigger fees hit the books.
So it's all based on the percentage of the cost of the claims that are paid out, basically?
It's not. It's a per head, per contract, per member fee that, okay. The ACA. So there's two different fees there. So, yep, just one won't hit until this next year. You got it. So total expenses for fiscal year 14 were $26,891,098.31. We had a little bit of a loss this year at $137,000, ending our reserve balance at $21.7 million. Again, very consistent from what we've seen in the past. Bill tries to manage that between 98 and 102% of where he budgets, and certainly we are within that this year. Any questions on that overall summary? So page 3 shows for all the counties in the pool, the 24 counties, where the utilization was for the past year. If you want to look to the fifth from the bottom, Story County, you'll see where your premiums and expenses came in for the year. So this year, that first column, we had premiums that were paid in for the program in order to cover the approximately 52 employees that are on the health insurance plan through ISAC, $493,618. The expenses are in the next two columns, the first one being claims that were paid within the actual fiscal year time frame, $549,701.19. We then add to that the next column, which are claims that were incurred during that time frame but paid outside that. We know sometimes there's a lag from providers, so adding the $74,926.83. Those two numbers together are going to get us to our total expenses, two columns over, at $624,628.02. And when we compare that back to the premiums that were paid in, this year we did have a little bit higher utilization over to the far right at 127%.
Just a question that comes to mind there. Will that $74,000 expenses that have been paid in this fiscal year but were attributed to the last fiscal, mm-hmm. Does that get double counted? So
no.
So I look at the total expenses,
yep,
from July 1st of 13 through June 30 of 14.
Yep.
Does that 549 include the amount that we paid after the fiscal year was over, or does it only get counted one time?
It only gets counted one time. Yep, you've got it. So it's just going to have those claims that just hit the books after, but were attributed to that time frame. It'd be the same thing going forward this next year. Yep, exactly. Good question. Page 4 at a high level just shows the financial outlook. So this is the same illustration as what we went through initially on that page 2. 2014 is going to be the same numbers. 15 and 16 are just projections, so what we expect to see in order to obviously ensure that we keep the fund solvent. So with these projections, and again, not to go into too much detail, but at the very bottom of the page, you'll see kind of a best case, worst case scenario of where we will end the reserve balance. And obviously that reserve balance helps to ensure the sustainability of the program into the future. So in 2015, at the very bottom, the ending fund balance, which are the numbers that we talked about, 14, it was at $21.7 million. In 15, we would likely get to $21.2 million, and in 16, $21 million. However, we know in those time frames we do have some maximum additional liability and some other liability for claims that are paid after the fact per Rick's question that he just asked. So worst case scenario, we could end in 2016 with the reserve balance being at $14.6 million. We know, looking back, that we haven't really had those situations come up within the last 5, 6, 7 years. There was a period of time back in the early 2000s where we bought that reserve down quite a bit, but things are setting pretty well. And again, like to show these numbers. ISAC likes to be totally transparent about kind of the possibility of where the fund will be in the next couple years. Any questions on that?
Yeah. Just, as we see expenses continue to grow,
Yep.
Are we comfortable with the ending fund balance right there at 21 million? So I guess it's more of a percentage question. Is that ending fund balance, I think I recall a year or so ago, you told us that maybe that ending fund balance was getting a little high percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just talk to me about where we feel like it is now.
Sure. So right now we have enough money within the reserve to pay for about, you can see in 2014, 73.83% of our expenses. That's how much we have in the bank. I think Bill said at the board meeting, Wayne would have been there, that the requirement for the state is 25%.
Right.
So we are adequately reserved.
Right.
However, it would be an argument of whether we're over-reserved or under-reserved.
Right.
I would say that, you know, some of these additional expenses that have come up, like the ACA fees, they're not raising rates for those kinds of things. So we are kind of steadily buying down that reserve slightly, but keeping in mind that we don't want to go too far to be able to protect the pool. So.
Yeah, and do we have an idea of what that percentage, so as it falls from 73 to a projected 47%,
right,
do we have an idea of where we're comfortable? Knowing state law is 25,
sure,
clearly we want to be more than that. Where do we want to be?
I think based on, again, this is Bill's decision at ISAC, but my guess is with where he's had the fund at that $21 million, he probably wants to keep it at that level.
Yeah, and Rick, that's a good question. And that same comment was shared at the board meeting. It was brought out again, and it based on the historical perspective as well and then the comfort level. And but, yeah, those are very good questions. Unfortunately, not too many people in our sessions ask those kind of questions, so it's very helpful for, you know, have that analysis to share. And I think these are the types of things, too, it'll also be helpful sometimes when the board is getting ready to meet and talk about things like this. If you have suggestions or ideas, you can always forward those to Bill, and certainly he will respond to that. That's an entity.
To me, Wayne, it's just a fine line. It is, you want to have enough there to make sure that you don't have the knee-jerk rate increases and decreases and can absorb some of those, but there's no reason for us to carry too many dollars,
sure,
whatever that level is.
Yep.
And so I just didn't know what kind of analysis had been done on that.
Yep. Again, to Wayne's point, too, I think if you guys – we're right on the front end of in 2002 when that reserve balance did go down significantly. I think there's a desire to keep it at a level to where we don't get into that situation again. So,
okay.
But certainly those comments, as Wayne mentioned, I'm sure Bill would appreciate as well. The fifth page shows the different options that are available through the ISAC program. Currently today, Story County employees have the option to look at plans 8, 9, 10, 11, and 13. So we have a number of plans that are offered today, the majority of them that are run through the program. So you can see those plans and the other ones that are offered as well. But since you offer most of them, I probably won't go through many of those details unless you had any questions.
How do we stack up with some of the other 24 counties in terms of the number of plans offered? Is do counties tend to look at maybe limiting that to maybe just two plans, or do we see... Or is there particularly some advantages by reducing the number of plans? I mean, I think as we think long term, those are the types of questions that we need to type and look at, I think.
Yep. When we get to the last page, you'll see how many plans each county offers. But I'd say on average, one or two plans is what we're looking at for most counties. You know, if you had more employees coming into the pool, the more that you would have, the more options typically you can offer. I'd say, you know, with a small group like yours, it probably at this point would be a good idea to lessen the plans because you lessen your selection and the potential for the numbers to go as high as they have. It also helps out from an administration standpoint not to have to administer that many plans as well.
Yeah.
You know, with the location of Story County, you guys are relatively central. That HMO option, I think, would continue to be a really good value to your employees here because that's a less costly option. And then having that a PPO option would probably be a great idea.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Page 6 shows the county utilization here at Story County since you came into the pool in 1999. So the income and expenses since that time and your county use rate as well since that time and the average contracts that have been covered. ISAC will continue this year to use a 5-year use rate in order to determine each county's rates, and so you really would point your attention to the time frames of 2010 2010 through 2014. Those are the use ratios that are going to factor into that claims factor of the overall rate, premium, and renewal that is being discussed today. At the very bottom of the page, you can see your five-year average is at 96%. So even though we had a slightly higher year this year, 2009, we had a higher utilization as well, so we dropped off that year. This year, we had the 127%. It kind of offset for that. Our five-year usage at that 0.96 puts us at the base rate for the ISAC plan. So we will continue to be at that base rate. We won't experience an increase due to our claims this year, even though we had a little bit higher year.
Yeah, I was hoping we were going to replace that 42% overage with less than a 27% overage, but I guess anything that's down is better than nothing.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, if you cover more individuals in the future, that certainly would help spread out the risk and have the potential to bring down the rate overall.
I think that's coming.
Yep, there's a possibility there.
Okay.
Page 7 just breaks down Story County and where your utilization and expenses break out. So that second page where we talked about all 24 counties, this is your piece of the pie in terms of the expenses. So we already talked about the income that you paid in, close to about $500,000 in premiums this year to cover your average 61 employees. The expenses are shown also broken out for Story County, the total settled claims, the network access fee administration expense, and on down the line. Your annual cost per contract was $10,239.80 compared to ISAC's average at $12,589.47. Part of the reason that is so much lower is you have a lot more single contracts covered under your plans compared to a lot of other counties where they have a pretty substantial family contribution. Pages 8 and 9 show all the different options in the plan that we already saw, but also taking into account your base rate we talked about that you earned this year. So at the very top, you'll see the experience adjustment is due to that five-year average. So no penalty, no discount. We're even on that. And then with wellness this year, we did not see any kind of discount for that. So previously, we'd had a couple percentage points discount, and this year we're going in with no discount. We didn't quite make it to that threshold to get to the discount, which, of course, we know is a challenge here at Story County with only having 61 people out of your total population in that program. So these will show you your final rates, and again, we'll compare those to the rest of the counties here coming up in the next few slides. If you skip to page 10, this just really outlines what we've already discussed in terms of the fiscal year income and expense compared to the total income and expense. I'll direct your eyes to the far right of the page. So for Story County, if you follow that across, you'll see that the 2016 discount ratio, that third column from the right, is at 1.0. Again, this is because we didn't earn a wellness discount. We're at that claims base rate. Last year, we know we got a 2% discount for wellness, so our rates would have adjusted downwards 2%. And then in fiscal year 14, our ratio would have been the base rate as well. So we've been pretty consistent.
And so the wellness discount is on the calendar year. So that's an option if we can encourage more people to participate in that.
Absolutely.
And using these figures as part of our in-house marketing plan, mm-hmm. We may be able to see a discount a year from now, in other words.
Exactly. Got it, Wayne. Yep.
Okay.
So if next year the base rate increases 5% and you earn that 5% wellness discount, you know, that would be a no change in rates. So that's exciting that there are possibilities out there. Yep.
I think we could put that under the Environmental Health Department's charge and say, you know, to make sure that our employees were a little bit more healthier.
There you go. Whatever it takes.
Well, Margaret is sitting here, so I thought I'd get a chuckle out of her.
We need everybody's help with wellness, don't we? So page 11 is just a comparison of all the counties, the different plans that they offer. So to your question, Wayne, you can kind of look and see what plans are offered, how many plans are offered by each county. Again, most of them are offering one or two plans. With Story County and your five plans that are offered, we show the actual renewal rates. Those rates this year at about a 10.5% increase, depending on which plan we look at. The board did approve, it's a couple pages back, but an 8.5% increase. So when we add on that additional 2% for the loss of the wellness discount, that's where we get to that 10.5% this year. You can compare yourself to everybody else, and again, theirs are a function of their claims and their wellness and all those types of things as well. Since you gentlemen have been a part of the board for a number of years, I'll skip page 12. That's kind of history on the wellness program and where we've been. Page 13 shows the 15 wellness program overview, the program that just started as of January 1st this year. Going to be very similar to what we've seen in years past. It'll be up to a $250 incentive for each employee that's on the health plan. In order for them to get that money, they can earn up to $100 for preventive exam and then their wellness assessment. They also can get an additional $150 for activities that are shown on the slide, and the county gets to choose which options that they're going to offer employees throughout the year. All activities, again, this year will be completed by October 31st. Everything will be managed out there on the Wellmark Wellness Center. We've moved to that WebMD portal where we can track and monitor all those things out there. And then again, the county can earn up to 5% in their discount. One of the changes this year will be that we'll actually be issuing cards throughout the year as employees are earning those cards. So we hope that that'll help, to continue to motivate people. We're not waiting till the very end of the year to issue those cards. So that'll be hopefully a positive change. And this year, the percentage will be the same. The county's goal will be to get to the maximum discount at 5% will be an average of 3.5 activities per employee covered on the plan. Page 14 shows just the overall approved measures that the board took this year. And, of course, Wayne was at that meeting December 3rd. The base rates increased 8.17%. Again, those do differ a little bit between the different plans. The group did also approve a change in the specialty drug program we'll talk about here in a minute. They also adopted the discount proposal with a loss of the discount limited to 5% per year, which didn't impact Story County this year. They agreed to continue to pay those ACA fees through fiscal year 16, so that won't be something you have to worry about. And they also approved the wellness program that we just discussed. So the next couple pages are a few Wellmark slides on the pharmacy changes, one of which will for sure be going into effect as of July, and the other one we wanted to get the board's feedback on today. So that first page, the specialty pharmacy, when we looked at the utilization this past year, we saw that the health claims went up 1.5%, but the pharmacy claims went up 18.5%. And so when we look at the overall utilization, we're seeing the increase on the pharmacy side, and a lot of that was attributed to these specialty drugs, which are one of the biggest growing parts of the pharmacy program, what we've seen across our book of business, not just ISAC. As you can see by the slide, really this is an issue where we have only 1% of the prescriptions but 21% of the drug spend. So we're looking at these medications are averaging $2,000 to $3,000 per month per individuals. An example would be most commonly, these are injectable type drugs that individuals would be taking for like a rheumatoid arthritis, a multiple sclerosis, those types of medications and conditions. The positive thing is these medications have helped people live more normal lives and avoid future medical costs, those kinds of things. But we also have to find a way to try to reduce costs as much as we can on those new technologies. So because of the increase in those costs, if you flip to the next page, we have decided on putting a cost measure in place with the specialty pharmacy drugs. And what will happen is today we cover those drugs under the medical side of the plan. So depending on where an individual's at with their deductible, coinsurance, out-of-pocket, they'd be paying for those drugs there. But we're going to be adding now a drug copay on the drug card side of things in order to curb utilization. We know we have better discounts on the drug side of the plan, better utilization management, those kinds of things. So that second bullet, we're adding a $45 copayment, which is the same as our third tier for specialty medications, which will actually be a benefit to a lot of members. Today, the average cost for individuals that are taking those specialty drugs are $150 on the medical program side. And that's going to be different for each individual and where they're at with their deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums and those kinds of things. But overall, we felt like it was more than fair to go ahead and put in that $45 copayment. The other requirement will be this
there
year.
There are some specialty drugs, though, that the copayment would be higher than the 45, or is this the max that they would pay for whatever it is?
That would be the max. Yep. The only specialty drug, Wayne, to your point, the last bullet point on here is if it is an infused specialty medication or an office administered, that would still go through the medical plan. So if a script is written for the specialty drug, it's always going to be that $45 copayment, subject to the maximum on the drug card side. Mm-hmm. However, if it's in the office or infused, it'll still be subject to that medical plan. But in that case, it would be paid the same way it is today.
So help me reconcile here. So if I flip back to the other page, you've got $70 million in the specialty from the pharmacy. That's the $45 copay. And then I can't read it real well under the purple, but it looks like maybe $102 million in the medical side, and that will remain the same.
Correct. Yep, this is a Wellmark book of business slide, so this shows just how our overall book of business is performed, which is similar to how ISACS has. But yeah, the part that's still in the medical, that's been in the medical, will stay in the medical if it's filed that way. But anybody that's getting a script now will be subject to the drug
card. So the $70 million was in medical, and now we've put in this new $45 copay instead of running it through medical for that $70 million portion on the top.
The $70 million portion is what's been run historically through the drug card. The $102 is what's been historically run through the health. So what's going to happen is we're going to take part of that $102 million and move it to the drug card to help to manage that cost better.
Right.
So, yeah, it gets a little complicated.
Yeah. And define for me specialty drug.
So it's typically going to be an injection-type medication that a lot of these can be self-administered now. So it'll be, a syringe medication. An example would be if you've heard of Humira, Enbrel for rheumatoid arthritis. These drugs help to manage that condition in order to prevent future joint replacements, more significant medical care costs. There's also some oral medications, some cancer, chemotherapy drugs. This is really where we're seeing the growth on the pharmacy side of, things and utilization. So we'll continue to see more of these type drugs. They call them biologics. So again, they're more expensive. Generally, they're administered at home or through an infusion, and they're really used to treat typically chronic type conditions.
Sure. And I'm just trying to figure out where the line is. So clearly there's a line somewhere that says, no, this is not a normal prescription drug. This is a specialty drug, and it's got to be more than just whether you inject it or something like that. There's something that makes it a specialty drug versus just a normal run of the mill drug.
It's just like we have our tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. It's put into that specialty category because it meets one of those criteria. And so when an individual goes out to Wellmark.com and does a search, they'll know that it's a specialty drug. It'll show as a specialty drug out there.
Okay, but that's what I was looking for. So this is specialty drug as defined by Wellmark.
Correct.
It's not that there's some kind of industry standard that tells us whether something's a specialty drug.
We could differ slightly, but really it's pretty common across the board to have it to be those infused drugs, the injectables, or the more expensive oral type medication. So, yeah, you're right. We are really identifying those, but it is pretty common across the board. So the next slide is what we wanted your feedback on. A couple years ago when I was here, I talked about how we had a new pharmacy program and there was an option, Plan 11B, we did roll out and didn't have a whole lot of takers with the counties. But given the increased pharmacy utilization, Bill's asked just for your opinion. What we're looking at is essentially covering less drugs under the pharmacy program. So we've got a number of different options under our Wellmark pharmacy product portfolio. Today, ISAC offers the BlueRx Complete program, which is over to the far right, and that's going to essentially cover 99% of the drugs out there on the market, regardless of if there's a generic or any other type of option available that would be less costly to the plan. We have four options, so the next option in the line is the BlueRx Value Plus, which is going to limit the drugs to about 87%. And what this is going to cut out is essentially where we know that there's another drug that's available on another tier that's going to be less expensive to help treat medications. So again, this is really at our latitude and longitude as far as how we're going to define that. A lot of times those drugs are combination drugs, so today maybe you take one drug for blood pressure and cholesterol, but there are actually two generic drugs that could do that same thing. Or today maybe you take a extended release drug where, you know, you take one drug a day and it's going to fulfill your need for the day, whereas you could actually take one every 4 hours, would be a generic and be much less costly to the plan. So some of those kinds of things.
Now,
go ahead, Wayne.
From a plan administration point, I could understand, you know, wanting to kind of look at this, but let's take it from patient or
sure,
client.
Sure.
How do they know the difference? I mean, they're going to rely primarily on the doctor and whatever they basically prescribe, and unless somebody says, hey, there's a new drug on the market that for experimental purposes, let's try this. How do we, I mean, are we forcing people to make choices? If they would opt to use one of the limited drug offerings rather than the 99%. See, when I look at the 99%, I'm saying that that's going to cover most of the drugs that are out there on the market.
Correct.
If you go to the other one, there's going to be some exceptions. There's some that you may have had may no longer be covered.
Correct.
Is that a correct way to...
Correct. We're really trying to educate the consumer and saying, you know, there is a less expensive option out there. And it essentially it would be a position to where if the member took that drug today, they would have to make a choice. And they would have to look at a less expensive option out there. Again, it's the education piece of most people aren't going to be substantially impacted given it is essentially the same to take, you know, the two blood pressure cholesterol drugs versus the combination.
Take it from now,
but there are situations
take that
when
from
you're
the
right.
administration point of view, say as a county, we've adopted if they are the association under the plan, if the counties say, yeah, let's go with this 87% option or any of the other ones that's listed here.
Yep.
Now the educational piece again is my biggest concern is
sure.
How do you assure that you can educate the users of these various drugs to where they feel like it's going to be effective to meet whatever symptoms they may have, and yet at the same time, as an insurance carrier, we are lowering our costs because these drugs are considerably higher on the market, as we know. So what do we put in place if this is adopted, if we go to some of these other options?
So we have on Walmart.com the formularies identified. When a member goes out, and again, this would be more of a consumer education piece to say you need to go out and check all your drugs online. Now you're going to select that BlueRx Value Plus, and you're going to look up your drugs and see what's covered and what other options are available out there. Generally, when we make this change, we'll send a letter out and say, here's the drugs that you're impacted by. Here's the new choices that you have, and help them through that process. Not to say, Wayne, to your point, that there might be some consumers or doctors that say, gosh, we'd really rather you take that other drug. So that is the issue and kind of the rub with making this kind of change. So what ISAC really wanted me to ask, and what we're asking all the counties is, if we were able to, for instance, take that 8% base rate increase this year down to 5%, given we know that that pharmacy utilization has been our biggest issue, would that be something that you all would be willing to consider? And again, we have to flesh out a lot more details in the meantime, but wanted to get your pulse on what your thoughts were for the reaction of this type of program. This is not a decision that's been made at this point. We're just really getting feedback.
And for me, I guess question back to you, are you talking about this being an option for subscribers, or is it something that we would say, okay, all of our plans are now this limited formulae?
It's an option today, so it would be probably something that we would move to across the board.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, we'd take either of that feedback back. If you'd say, gosh, maybe we'd look at that option again this year, or if you feel like it's something that would be palatable with that 3% reduction in premium, then, again, that's what they're looking for, too, just to kind of get a consensus from the counties as to whether that would be palatable.
Yeah, and so I'll just speak for me. On the surface, I view it as more of an option to a plan. I think I'm kind of like Wayne. I like the individual to have the choice, but we need to recognize that it costs more for this 99% of drugs. But if the employee were to choose that option, great. There's just a cost associated with it. I just don't know if that's feasible from an administrative point of view.
Exactly.
And clearly, I think you said first thing, you rolled it out, but not very many people moved to this 87%, which tells me maybe there wasn't enough of a savings in that.
Yep.
That would be where I would come down just on first blush. I would be really hesitant without knowing a lot more about it to say, no, we're going to limit now what drugs are covered on the plan, unless I could, you know, with my limited knowledge of this stuff, could be really assured that everything's still going to be met, even if it's a generic drug that you've got to take four times a day instead of one time a day.
Right.
That help?
No, absolutely it does. And I think that's the feedback we got a couple years ago as well. I will say for my book of business and the private groups that we insure through Wellmark that are self-funded, so they're taking on this risk just like ISAC is, probably have moved about a third of our groups over to this product because we've continued to see this pharmacy utilization go up. So we can give members the choice, but at the same time we have to empower them to make good decisions too, which is we'll continue to uptick the cost. We know, again, ISAC's generic utilization is fabulous, 86%. So these are the types of drugs we're going to continue to see out there on the market that drug companies are going to push, and it's kind of a it really is a decision that the group at some point needs to make to say, gosh, do we want to cover those, or if we know there's a less expensive option, do we want to really kind of empower the consumer to say that's what they need to take in order to maintain the sustainability of the program.
Yeah, see, what I think I'd like to see as the employer, I'd like to see something where maybe the employer could come forward and say, okay, we're funding this 87% option.
Sure.
And you have the option to go get the 99%, but here's what it's going to cost you as an individual if you want to do it. That, to me, would minimize the cost to the employer but still give the employee the options if that's what works for them.
Right.
Sure. No, that makes sense. And it would give the population a chance to test it out, and maybe someday you go away from that. But, sure, that gets everybody comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take that back, definitely. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep.
The last couple slides are on the Affordable Care Act. So slide 18 is just my disclaimer that I have to put in front of you every year, that the lawyers made us say that this stuff is changing on a pretty regular basis. And so did want to, again, point out the provisions that are coming up. The next slide shows just kind of the timeline with the ACA. 2010, it was signed into action on the federal side, and through 2018 we've got a number of provisions that are rolling out. This is a slide that we showed to the ISAC labor union group, and Pat was involved with that meeting. We pointed out, and the arrows are some of the more significant provisions that have gone into place these past few years. We know those fees as they're outlined are being paid by ISAC. The employer shared responsibility and the employer reporting are really the biggest pieces here these next couple years. We know the penalties are going to hit employers in 2015 this year. And so that next.
This is a good point, and Amanda, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Sure.
This is more for the public probably than you, but it's important for you. We just found out late last week that the Affordable Care Act is, in fact, going to impact Story County and the way we have traditionally provided insurance, and we've done that through Flex Cash, which you could take as individual cash, and we found out that that is not allowable as of July 1st, which is where I look at. We've got, I think, is it, how many do we have? 52. We've got 52 of our 300 and some odd employees taking insurance right now. I think we're going to see that number change dramatically. First of all, we've got, I think, 12 of those in a program that's not going to exist anymore. So we're going to see a reduction there. But I think with the idea that our employees aren't going to be able to take that $575 a month anymore, what kind of plan we come up with is going to greatly impact how our numbers taking insurance.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was more for you.
But yeah, no, absolutely. Listen, I and Pat were talking about that before we came in, so that'll be a definite change that will hopefully, as you have more employees come into the program, help your overall utilization in the plan.
Well, the nice thing about it is I won't have to worry about losing any more hair thinking about it.
Yes, it's been a question out there for a couple of years, hasn't it?
Yes.
So this last page just kind of goes over those requirements, and you're well aware that you have to cover 70% of your folks or you're subject to penalties this next year, which is why you're making those decisions already. So good news for Story County that you guys are on top of that. That's all we had today. Is there any other questions that anybody had?
Thank you very much for coming up and taking us through it. And good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
You too.
I'm going to need it.
Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you. Travel safe.
You bet.
Okay. All right, consideration of minutes. We've got both the December 30th and the January 2nd organizational.
Move approval of both the 30th and the January 2nd organizational meeting.
Second.
Motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes are approved. Personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda, please add road closure 1526.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. First consideration of Ordinance 235 amending Section 1.11-2, Ordinance Adoption Procedure, the Story County Code of Ordinances. Charlie, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I believe at our joint meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission back in November, I brought this up that for a few years under Story County Ordinance Number 1 is what we used to refer to it as. The requirement stated for public hearings that we had to publish notice at least 15 days prior to the public hearing. State code was changed some years ago from that to now say no more than, or no less than four, no more than 20 days. With Story County's or with Story County's requirement plus state code's requirement, we pretty much had between 15 and 20 days to publish notice, which gave us, our department particularly, 4 weeks after our Planning and Zoning Commission meetings to where we could hold meetings in front of the Board of Supervisors. So with that, we have proposed changes. I have run this past Jessica Reynolds. We're proposing just to amend the language in this section to pretty much just say that we have to do what state code says. That way we can now start publishing the no less than four, no more than 20, instead of doing the 15. However, if there is a particular case, for example, that we want to do advance notice for, we still could do the 15. We still have that allowance. We're just allowing a decrease in the time for our applications particularly. The other one I wanted to point out was in subsection C. We used to state that the complete ordinance shall be published not more than 10 days following its final passage. State code states that a summary of the ordinance or the complete text of the ordinance shall be published, and then it goes on to kind of give examples of what a summary is. So for us, there's a lot of times where we have a lot of language that's being changed. There'd be significant cost savings to us if we just did a summary as opposed to the full text. So we're also proposing to change that to comply with what state code says. So pretty simple changes on this one. Will help our department out immensely in getting our cases through and a lot of cost savings as well as far as publication goes. So if there's any questions on the changes, I would be happy to answer them.
Any questions?
No.
Okay, then we'll go ahead and open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody wishing to address this topic. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close the public hearing and I'll turn to the board.
I would move approval of the recommended amendments to the Code of Ordinance number 235, amending section 111-2.
You want to set a second reading?
And second reading would be January the 13th.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. First consideration passes, and we'll deal with this again next week. Thanks, Charlie. Next item is consideration of annual report and funding request for FY16 from Story County Soil and Water Conservation District, Mark Chumlin, and I see our friend Irv Kloss, too. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Pleased to be here, and thank you for this opportunity to address the supervisors. You have our annual report in front of you, and there's just a few things that I would like to pull out of there. And there's a couple things that didn't quite make it in because they were happened a little bit later. But I do think about the 70-some years that the Soil Conservation Service has been in a part of this nation, and we feel, you know, proud of that conservation ethic that's born out of that. And we as commissioners are all pleased to serve and promote that ethic. One of the ways that we feel that we're doing that quite well is our ability to partnership with other groups. And certainly the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority is one of those major efforts where IRV is partnershiped with other groups to improve the water quality and the watershed of Squaw Creek. And then there's also 4 Mile Creek as well. And IRV will speak more about that. Just last week, we co-signed with a group of people from Iowa State, from the Landscape Design Department, who are working with Lake Laverne to improve the water quality of that lake. The watershed for Lake Laverne comes strictly from campus. It doesn't come from any other sources. But right now, the nitrogen content of Lake Laverne is higher than what you would find in Miracle-Gro fertilizer. And so the landscape department has looked at a project that's been quite successful in other nations and was pioneered in Europe of using floating islands of vegetation where the plants don't actually anchor their roots into the soil, but they get all the nutrients they need right out of the water. And we've signed on with them. Hopefully they'll get their grant to begin the research on Lake Laverne. And if these floating islands would be made out of, they'd be fairly small, made out of PVC pipe with a netting to support the plants. And they have to be pulled in every year off the water because you don't want the plants to deteriorate in the water and put those nutrients right back in. But then the fall, so you pull them out in the fall. In the spring, you replace them. And if this project is successful, there's a great deal of hope that maybe that could work in, for example, at Hickory Grove Lake.
Sure.
Would be an ideal location for those. So it's this notion of being able to partnership with Iowa State, with the County Conservation Board, with other groups that we feel well poised to do that, and will continue to do it in the future.
Do they use?
Well, it's all experimental, but they've mentioned everything from tomatoes to plants that actually naturally occur.
So it doesn't need to be aquatic.
No.
Huh.
It would be like hydroponic tomatoes in a sense, because you know they're just putting.
And is this something that floats on top of the water in some type of?
Maybe an island would be 10 by 10.
Right. I was wondering how much of the surface they would have to use. And then they would probably move them at certain times to different other areas?
They can move them. The main thing is they have to bring them in the fall. They don't want the plants to sit there. But then the plants will be perennials. So most of them will. So you can remove the top part that would deteriorate and take the floating island then and relocate it in another pond or lake and produce more. And that's what they're looking at doing then is providing these for other locations if this proves as successful as it has been in Europe. So that's kind of a new and exciting project that we're partnering with right now. Each year, we started a new program where the commissioners take a traveling tour of Story County, looking at watershed issues, and that's been helpful for us as commissioners to be able to do that. We have two new elected commissioners now, Sheldon Spencer, who lives in Huxley, who's very interested in environmental issues and has been involved with trees, and so he's a great asset to the board, as well as Gerald Fitzgerald. So in looking over the report, maybe I'll just touch on the activity of using the county funding. As you remember, each year we receive $5,000, and some years that accumulates because we feel that, you know, we're kind of waiting for something to come along that could use that. And this past year we had two major projects, and one was the funding of cover crops as demonstration projects. And these were cost share projects to really get the cover crops out, and so farmers can look at them. And you know, every time I drive from here to Ames on Lincoln Way and look at the Lincoln Way Energy Plant as well as the DuPont plant, I'm just reminded of the new intensity that's being asked of farmers to produce agricultural crops on their land. And with that new intensity, that stepped up of intensity, comes, you know, more environmental issues. And, you know, the cover crops, both of those, the intensity of corn farming and now removing the stover from those fields is depleting the organic matter in these soils. And that's going to become a huge issue in the future. And cover crops are a great way to combat that depletion of organic matter in the soil and to avert some of the problems that might occur in the future. We made the decision to use county funding to support the cost sharing of renewed or new septic tanks in the Hickory Grove watershed. We learned that there were 10 outdated septic systems that were bleeding into Hickory Grove. And several years ago, we became aware of this and wanted to do something about it. Unfortunately, the state and federal money that we have was restricted to other uses. So we were happy that we could use our county funding for that project. Are there any questions at this point? If not, I'll turn it over to Irv, and he can fill in some of the gaps.
Okay. Well, excuse me. Thanks, Mark. I've been privileged to serve on the board for the Watershed Management Authority for Squaw Creek over the past year, and I've been very pleased with the results of that effort. The consultant that we hired from Minnesota has completed the report, and the board accepted that last month. And one of the things that, if you have a chance to look at that report, and I think Paul can provide that, is the Appendix 4, the last, which is a group of maps that have been worked out with GIS techniques to actually identify where the critical areas are in the watershed to apply the practices that have been identified that will essentially help improve water quality. And it's in sync with the nutrient reduction strategy that the state has adopted to help clean up our waters. And I think that those maps actually represent an application that is new, and our watershed will be the first one to use this modeling approach to identify those key areas. As Mark said, we do a lot of partnering, and I think that that's a crucial part of our work. And listening to the health insurance people that just spoke to you earlier, you know, the health of the soil is the same thing. Mm-hmm. We have to identify what is affecting that health and then try to educate the public and try to educate the people who own that land in order to improve the health of that soil. And as Mark mentioned also, that we're losing organic matter. And I've read recently in several places where the organic matter that is being lost worldwide has contributed up to 20% of the increase in CO2 in the atmosphere that is causing the global warming. So we have to somehow find out how to remedy that and get that organic matter back in the soil. And we hear a lot about, you know, techniques to pull or CO2 out of the atmosphere and sequester it somewhere. And we know that plants can do this. Mm-hmm. And so we actually leave our soils exposed for long periods of time every year after we harvest. And that soil is essentially exposed to the weather and to erosion and so on. But tillage is a major factor in allowing that carbon that's in the soil to volatilize and go into the atmosphere and become CO2. And so no-till and cover crops, I believe, are the answer to this, improving that health of the soil and getting that organic matter back in the soil. And there's been some estimates by some soil scientists that say that this we could sequester up to 3 parts per million out of the atmosphere every year, globally, not, you know, just in Story County, of course, but globally that could be done, and that would help a great deal towards the...
Are we growing 2 parts per million a year? Just to educate me, it feels like I read somewhere that we're seeing 2 parts per million more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere every year. So if we could sequester 3 parts per million every year, it would help reverse that.
And even if it was equivalent, it would still be a positive.
Well, equivalent is what we want, isn't
it? That's right. So hopefully we can move forward, and I think soil is the answer to global warming in many ways, and we've got to continue to improve the health of our soil. But the problem is that industrial agriculture has come in, and we're really made some transitions over the last 30 years or so when we went from the moldboard plow to chisel plows and left a lot of residue on the surface. That was a big step, and I think farmers realize that, and so they're, I think, with education, we can get to the point where we can convert now to cover crops and no-till and actually improve our methods that we can use to solve not only increased productivity, because people who have been practicing no-till and cover crops have shown that their productivity increases. And good examples are found in several different places, ranchers in Bismarck, North Dakota, and farmers in Ohio have been doing this, and they outproduce all their neighbors, up to 25% more productivity just from using that technique. And I think as one farmer, neighbor farmer in, the man's name in Ohio is named David Brandt, and when his neighbor said, well, it took me a while to see that he was doing the right thing. And he said, well, why it isn't? He says, well, I had blinders on. Mm-hmm. I mean, seems like it takes a long time to educate people and get them to do these things. And we're getting there, but it's going to take some time. So I just want to second Mark's thank you for the support you've given us, and it's going to good places, and we're making those dollars work as well as we can. And we're faced with constant reductions from the Natural Resources Conservation Service, who is our major partner and provides much of the funding that we use to put practices on the land. We now share a district conservationist between Story County and Marshall County. We also share our secretary, which is paid by the state secretary, is covering both Marshall County and Story County, all because of budget constraints at the state and federal levels. And our, top it off, our secretary retired last month, who's been serving us for 18 years, Claudia Dalby, and we're really going to miss her, and hopefully we'll be able to hire a new secretary in short order.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you for your service and what you do for us. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Oh, I've got on the agenda, there's a funding request.
Well, is it?
Is it the same 5,000 that we always put in?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
For this is for your annual request, correct?
That's right.
Correct.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Very good.
Good. Okay.
Yep. Let's take action to approve their report.
Move approval of the annual report as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep.
Next item is consideration of a financial contribution request of $10,000 for the Story City Swimming Pool Project.
Good morning.
Gentlemen, what's happening?
Hey.
Swimming pool, huh?
Well, we're sure hopeful of it anyway. Yeah, we got the bond issue passed, and we're in the planning stage, and hopefully we'll go through one more season at the pool and then start late in the fall. So,
I'm sorry? Mark, introduce.
Mark Jackson, the city manager.
And Mayor?
Jensen. Mike Jensen's the mayor here. I knew to introduce myself, but he started talking, so.
That was my fault.
That's true. We'll blame Sanders on that. Yeah, the voters approved a $2.65 million bond issue to build a new swimming pool. We're going to be applying for some Vision Iowa Community Attraction and Tourism Funds. I think you've been down this road before. Mm-hmm. One of the requirements is a contribution from the county. So we're here asking for a contribution. I think our request is for $10,000. How I came up with that is, and I've got a copy of it if you want it, I asked the state to give me, you know, what do you usually get from counties for a pool project because they give $100,000 for a slide. That seemed to be a norm of about $10,000 is what it was. And so we're here because one of the requirements for us to get the funding is going to be a county contribution. It doesn't have to be all in one year. It can be spread out over several years, but anything you can do would be greatly appreciated, gentlemen.
And based on assuming everything moves forward, you mentioned, you're looking at possibly not even starting the project until the fall of next year or spring of next year?
Yeah, we're bidding this out in two phases. Either we're going to be shut down this year and build it this year,
okay,
or we're going to shut it down next year.
Okay.
Just because of where, who knows where you guys are dealing too, where prices are going to be.
Sure.
We're bidding it out for two different seasons just to see where we come in at. Even if we got started this year, and we've dealt with the state and so have you on these projects, they just want to see a commitment. So even if it's not this fiscal year or if it's spread out somewhere over the next two or three, anything that we can show them works out great.
Okay. And gentlemen, for your information, actually checking into this, you know, we got a local option sales tax payment that frankly was much greater than we were expecting.
Right.
And so the reality for us is $10,000 is doable if we so choose, and it is most reasonable for Story County, as I see it, to pay it in this fiscal year if, in fact, we want to do it in order to help make sure that they can get that Vision Iowa money.
And there is some history on this. As chair last year, I was the one that received the letter and talked to Lisa about it. We've given money to Story County for their SCORE Park complex. And
we got money for – you guys gave us $20,000 for the Recreation Center project.
Yeah.
I got money to the city of Slater for their pool project, A to Aid. And so there's history on this.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
I would move in favor of the request from the city of Story City for $10,000 funding contribution.
Can we do it this year? Are you willing to add
this year?
I would second that. I would again just request that we ascertain that the funding is available for this year, and if so,
this
certainly move forward. But yeah, Yeah.
Yep. So I've got a motion to approve the $10,000 two-story city out of this year's lost funding. And okay. I want to make sure I'm not misstating your motion.
Nope, I'm fine.
Wayne,
with
you're
that.
Good with seconding that?
Right. Right.
Okay. Further discussion? Anything for you guys to add before we take action here? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. And
thanks, gentlemen.
Absolutely. And let's do get it done this year. So if you would just
send teeth.
Me something.
We appreciate it.
You guys are doing a great job.
You know, as much as I like sitting through presentations, I really did find informative the Amanda lady who spoke on the Wellmark.
Oh.
Trying to get, like you guys, our minds wrapped around all the changes coming down with health insurance. And I think that's probably the biggest issue we're all going to find on the expenditure side down the road.
So we entered 2015 knowing that we had a list of things that we had to do, and we found out on
last week.
Yeah, it was January 2nd. We found out that now has moved to the top of our list.
Same here.
To
we're
deal
losing
with.
Our plan as well.
Yeah. So.
And commend your snow removal guys. Did an excellent job. We got here pretty easily.
Good. Outstanding. Always good to see you guys.
Thanks for your service to Story County, guys.
Appreciate Thanks, Mike. It. See you, Mark.
See you, gentlemen.
Yep. Next item is consideration of site development plan of application for zoning permit 8270, commercial industrial zoning permit for construction of a warehouse for storage units. Charlie.
Yes, you'll recall back on December 16th we discussed this. I believe the board tabled decision on this until we could talk with the drainage district because of the drain tile that was going to be located within 5 feet of this building. The next day on December 17th, we did have a meeting with the drainage district, and the consensus was to move forward with this as long as the agreement was put in place.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the drainage district has signed the agreement, and I believe the applicant, Shelley, did sign it yesterday. So we're good to go on that. Any questions, I guess, left over on this one?
No, Tom Foster did sign it. He's the chair of the Boone County Board.
Duffy.
Or Duffy site.
Buffy, yeah.
And
Duffy.
That's the controlling county for the drainage district. So, yeah. And then I did see the applicant in yesterday signing that. Right.
And then the only thing I wanted to verify is we're not talking at this point about moving the line until they talk about coming in and putting in some more structures.
At some point in the future, they want to develop the south, about third of that property. They've got to put up the first three buildings on the northern mm-hmm. two-thirds there. So it's going to be probably a little bit before that does happen, but they have at least given some preliminary information that if they do ever develop that south end, they're going to want to move that drain tile. So,
good.
And I believe the agreement, too, has been recorded as well, right? Not yet. It will be, though? Okay. So we'll get that recorded, and we'll have it included with our permit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Action.
I'll move approval of the site development plan for zoning permit 8270.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Charlie, anything to add?
Nope.
Toot. Aye. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Site development plan is passed. No agency. Thanks, Charlie. No agency reports. We've got departmental report, environmental health, Margaret Janes. We're going to take a 2-minute recess before that.
Yep. Cool.
All right, we're back in session. Margaret James. Hi, Margaret.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
How's everybody?
Good.
Getting better from the flu at your house? And
I don't think it wasn't ever confirmed as flu.
Never confirmed.
Just the crud.
Okay. Let's see. So I'll go over some numbers. Septic systems, time of transfer inspections, we've done 67 this calendar year. Septic permits, we are up quite a bit. Compared to the previous 3 years, we're at 90. New house permits for planning and development was at 27. So as you can see, a lot of those systems going in are replacement systems, which is good.
I can't remember. Are we doing all septic systems at that new Cameron Estates or whatever that's called development?
That's
all septic. So that's what they've got. Probably four houses started out there now. So
yeah.
You're going to see a lot of those, I would say.
Yeah, so our numbers will be high next year as well. That's right.
That's the one by the old golf course, isn't it? No.
No. Cameron.
That's out
Cameron
almost
Estates.
The county line at 505th
yep,
Street.
Yep, got it.
Yeah. And then repair is only 7, and that's like a tank or a box being replaced.
How do we do on our Hickory Grove? What do we how many is there out there? 9?
Yeah, that I'll cover that in a few
minutes. Oh, you're going to come to that?
Yeah. Okay, so for wells, kind of a flat year, 32, 5 of which are water. Most of those are ag-related. 25 wells were plugged, 0 cisterns, 6 well rehabs, 107 water tests, and time of transfer well inspections were 44. Not sure we're catching all of them because they're not reported as well as they used to be because we're not out there looking at the septics. So some of them fall through the cracks. So far, we've spent $10,000 out of our grants to counties money for rehab, plugging, and testing, leaving $26,000 available for the last half of this fiscal year. This year, for the legislation, they're proposing to include arsenic in the grant testing, which will be good. Enforcement, we have 10 outstanding notice of violations, most of which are septic. When it gets closer to construction season, I'll send out another batch of letters, CC, legal, and then possibly start coming down a little harder on them, depending on if Jessica has time to work with us on that. And in this calendar year, we received 27 complaints. Top of the list is untreated sewage. People call in, we go out and inspect, and then make them fix it if we find a problem. Abandoned house is also kind of high on the list. A little bit of animal waste calls we usually get with DNR and work out something with them. Dumping trash, living conditions, water pollution, bed bugs, smoking, lagoon odor, illegal occupation, somebody not cutting their grass, and then pesticide exposure. So a real gamut of complaints that we get, pretty typical of any other year. Time of transfer, we have 5 binding agreements, most of which are they plan to demolish the house, and then we'll replace everything after they do that. There are 67 time of transfer septic inspections, and then I hope when Stacy gets a little, has been there a while, I'm going to sit down with her and we're going to figure out a better tracking system to learn if everybody is getting these time of transfer inspections who need to. I'm sure there's quite a few that are falling through the cracks on that. For the septic disclosure, if you recall, we changed that policy May 1st, 2014. Let's see, 2 for sure dropped out of the project. They just walked out in a huff and left it at that because we were concerned. I know that some of the projects would not be done at all if we went forward with this policy. So it hasn't been overwhelming. There's some people that are just so angry about it that they just walk away. Not too surprising. We updated 3 septic systems specifically for that. And, again, we need to refine the tracking on that. So environmental health and planning and development will work a little closer on that and get those numbers squared away a little better. All in all, I think it's an effective program. We're getting those systems updated. We need to do that. Lead inspection program, I have 9 open cases, 3 of which have kids residing there. We have started using the HHLPSS tracking, and we retired the Stellar tracking system, so I no longer have to physically go over to Ames Homeward and sit down and use their computer because it's online now. It's really, really nice. And a few glitches, but it's getting better and better. As Paul knows, we've switched over to iogrants.gov for reporting and retired SharePoint, and I feel that is going a lot better as well. And then Paul met with the gal over from Marshalltown, excuse me, and Story County agreed to be part of their lead hazard control grant. And, I want to show you. The picture there shows that is one of the requirements. If you're going to side lead-based paint, you have to write lead paint across the wall like that so that if it ever, 20 years from now, if they take that siding off, they will know that there's lead paint underneath that. Yeah. This is a case that's open right now, and, boy, they are just really working on trying to get those lead hazards squared away. But it was a super high lead poisoning case. I'm really glad to see the cooperation at this level. Now, on this
grant. It's a HUD grant that Marshalltown, they do all the work, basically, and they hand out the money, and they have inspectors that do this. But what was interesting was that when we signed up as Story County, it did not include the incorporated cities. They had to join separately. So after a lot of discussion, Ames decided not to participate in the HUD grant, and Nevada did not even respond to the request. So, and those are my two areas with the greatest population and the greatest amount of lead poisoning. So I was very disappointed to see that, very disappointed.
Is it just lack of education or timing, or do they feel that they have something in place to address this, or is this something that we, that you want to continue to try to explore through not only environmental health but also Homeward and other entities as well? From a
well, the next this grant runs through 2017, okay, and they had their chance, and so their chance comes up again in a couple of years. So.
So Nevada didn't even deal with it. What was Ames' rationale after all their discussion?
Ames wanted special consideration, special things. I was not part of that discussion, but according to Marshalltown, they wanted real special things, and they said, well, no, you've got to do it like everybody else, or don't do it at all. And so they finally walked away from it. The beauty of this grant is that instead of just, paying for the testing, it actually pays for home improvement, the siding and the windows, things like that. When I drive up to a place, the first thing I think is, how are they going to afford, getting this, turning this into a lead-safe house? So on the other side, Roland, I just did a lead poisoning up there, and they'll qualify because Roland is participating in this program.
Yeah, they were the only one that came. When she
is
did her
right?
informational meeting, it was I was there and the clerk from Roland.
Okay.
I can't remember what her last name is, but I think Roland was the only city in the municipality in the county that was represented at that informational meeting.
Wow!
And she made it pretty clear there that if a city wants to participate, they have to take it to the council, and if they don't, they won't qualify.
Okay.
So, all the municipalities had their opportunity. They all received the same information, and for whatever reason decided they didn't want to participate. So,
pretty amazing. And so the average grant amount to a single household is $12,000. So that's great,
yep.
Why not? It is a HUD program, and are they particular about things? So they're a little hard to work with, but Marshalltown is doing all the work. So
yeah.
Why not, So cool. I see Cambridge, McCallsburg, and Roland, all three are included. Trainings and meetings, I won't go through this list, but that's just the nature of the beast of this type of work. You have to attend a lot of meetings just to cover all the different topics. Hickory Grove Lake, just a little update on that. So I did the nine soil site reviews and issued the permits, so that was included in those 90. We only had three septics replaced and money paid out for those. The weather was really bad for that this year, but I think this spring we'll get most, if not all, of the rest of them replaced. And then $10,000 was received from the Story Soil and Water Conservation District, and we put that into our budget, and that money will go out, so I don't have to manage three checks, only two checks going out. On the West Indian Creek watershed, let's see, so it's just to the left of that blue area there. Conservation is taking a look at that and looking and trying to get some WERB money to do a study on that. And the main impetus behind that is that there just is no information on the water quality in that watershed. And so they called and asked if I was interested in doing the septic side of it. And there won't be any septic replacement grant money on this one, but I would like to have an educational component to that, so I would like to join in on that. And then just so looking at our files, we learned we learned that about 30% do not have acceptable systems. That's a lot. That's a lot. And I don't think that is unusual for
30% of what number?
30% of all the residential.
Yeah, estimate houses. That.
Okay.
In that watershed. So I'm looking at the little blue.
80, there's about 80 systems that need to be replaced in the East Indian Creek watershed.
Yeah.
80, yeah.
80 that need to be replaced.
Yes, okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And like some, and well, plus an additional 8 from Fernald that dump into the drainage tile and then land up. The town itself is not in this watershed, but they dump into it. So we'll add them. Crestview, I was out there yesterday, really cold and snowy. Let's see, I issued 4 notice of violations back in the fall. The sewage complaint, they got that squared away. I just kind of keep one of those available so I can issue it every third week because that's an ongoing problem over there. They did get their junk picked up. They had stuff everywhere, and they did a pretty good job of sort of pulling that in. I'm afraid it's kind of hidden in this one area that he won't let me go to, but at least it's not available for the kids to be playing on. Let's see. They did get the vacant trailers out of the roadways, and they kind of, as you can see, bottom left picture, they kind of pushed them to the side. That's a row of vacant ones. And then the top picture, it's a row of vacant ones that they put on the lagoon dam there. So there's another row there. And then there's a third area where they've got them stored. So they've got them so in there tight, I think there's about 14 to 18 vacant trailers there. Several of them, he calls them storage, you know, so it's kind of a hard thing to enforce because you can have things for storage, you can stockpile things that you think you're going to use. So this is such a gray area. I don't want him to think that he's done working out here because there's still a lot more that can be done. And then on that bottom right picture, that is his septic mound right there. And the whole thing used to be covered with logs and branches and right up to the walls of the trailers. So he did get that pulled off and the easily burnable branches away from the trailers. We were afraid of it being a fire hazard. So what's left there are the big logs, and he wanted the soil to freeze so that he could get equipment back up on that mound without smushing it and get those off. So he still has some violations out there. I'm going to extend the timing because I see progress. Mm-hmm. miscellaneous, Cameron Estates Erosion Control. They did overseed all of their waterways and ditches and bare soil out there, but it was so wet they got it in late, and then that cold spell came. Mm-hmm. So we might have some real soil erosion issues come spring. I'm pretty sure they'll work with us on that. Squaw Creek Subdivision burn pile. somebody that takes advantage of that burn pile, the yard waste, they called in and complained about somebody dumping their house trash. And as a result, DNR said nobody can do any of that, the yard waste or the garbage. So they're going to have to remove all of that. And this is still kind of in the back and forth stage. So we'll kind of see if they're going to cooperate with this. So they're disappointed about that answer. Bella Homes irrigation wells, they're looking at possibly putting one large well or several small ones if they can avoid the water withdrawal permit that they would need from the state, going with several small wells versus a big one. We'll see how that pans out. Dakin's Lake Farmhouse Septic, I was so excited. I thought, wow, they came forward to replace that septic up by the farmhouse up by the new lake there. And then they've retracted that decision. They thought they had to, but because it was in a state, they do not have to. I thought they were just doing it because it was the right thing to do. So that's kind of been retracted. I'm disappointed about that. Certification of septic contractors. Everybody that puts a septic system in Story County has to be certified by April 1st of this year. We are holding, with the Iowa Water Wastewater Association, we are holding classes here at the administration building to get everybody certified in time. Let's see, pool tattoo and tanning. IDPH currently reviewing two new pool plans for City of Ames hotels. And then we've administered one exam for tanning that owner. And otherwise, that's kind of a, that gets busier in the spring, that program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I have.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, thank
none.
You.
None. Thanks, Margaret.
Yep.
Thank you.
Liaison assignments. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne.
Very briefly, I met with Michelle at CLP yesterday morning. Primarily was to set up our regular bi-monthly meetings. We'll meet the first and third around 3:30 each Monday to just kind of update where things are going. Overall, her report was very positive as the new director that... the communication between her and I think is it Chris Sorensen is going quite well, and she just she did inform me that there the financial aspect that Chris is working on seems to be really moving quite well. He seems to have really got his arms wrapped around that, and one thing that will be coming up is there will be an audit that they will be required to complete. I don't know if I think it's either through the Medicaid program with the cost allocation reports and dollars that come through. But she's very confident that she's familiar with the process, and the two of them think that we'll be in good shape as far as meeting that requirement. Still concern with staff and filling certain positions, and she said that she has communicated with agencies regarding some of the stored files that may or may not need to be addressed when the new provider comes on board. And she's had communication with two interested providers that has the exchange of conversation has gone quite well. She's felt that we should be, and based upon what I heard from Deb also yesterday, probably within the next week or two, we will probably hear a report being brought forth to the board. The ADMIT team is in the process of the Regional Governance Board. They have received all the documentations, the budget request from two of the interested providers that is interested in maybe taking over the CLP program. And so they are evaluating that. And so I think that is moving along quite well also. So overall, she felt that in spite of some of the challenges that lie ahead, there is definite progress being made. And I assured her that the board just wanted to continue to support her in her endeavors, and we would keep her posted as we move forward. So then I met with Deb shortly afterwards, Hill-Rop, and then I had to sign a couple contracts that was approved at our last governance board meeting with some of the providers. And then she just gave me a little bit of an update about the process of that I just reported about the two interested providers and where we are in that process. And so I think that we're moving along quite well from that standpoint.
Outstanding. Thanks, Wayne. Mm-hmm. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. Board may not take any action due to the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody? Margaret, you want to say something as a member of the public? No? Okay. Yeah, okay, there's your public comment. Announcements from the supervisors. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne.
This afternoon at 1:30, Jim Hallahan from the Iowa Games, he's now back with them temporarily. Chuck Long, former quarterback, University of Iowa, I believe, is going to be the new executive director. He's bringing him by to meet us at 1:30 today, and so I'm happy to hear that. And then Dean Shady from IMWCA will be here to meet with Alyssa. I'm going to stop in with him. As you know, with our safety committee, one of the things that we will be embarking on is establishing a audit committee of the safety program. And so we're going to be leaning on IMWCA to give us the necessary background and training so that we can kind of do that as we continue to enhance the safety committee for all of Story County employees. So other than that, that's about it.
Outstanding. Two announcements from me. One, budget work session start on Monday. Preliminary figures look really, really good, but we've got some work cut out for us. And then we discussed earlier today, but just as an in announcement form, we did find out that due to the Affordable Care Act, our method of providing health insurance to our employees will not be allowed as of July 1st, 2015. And so the three of us have some work to do to figure out what exactly that's going to look like. If there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Hey, Renee,